Radio. Fred is joining us. Fred Malone. I guess I should give your last name because you're not on every day. You're on once a month. And Fred's from the Marion Historical Society. And I have to tell you this. Did I say that wrong? Marion
Historical Society? It's Marion County Historical Society, but that's right. And other entities, not just that. But.
I was watching NPR, or one of the stations that my wife and I watch quite regularly, and on came the story about the Broomfield.
Oh, yes. Somebody called me and said that they saw that on NPR.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah.
It's one of several videos that had been done over the years. I think that was done sometime in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
And it really focused on the farm.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Even more than him.
Yeah, there's a couple others. There's one about the Hollywood Connection, and there's another one about the barn raising that took place when the original barn burnt back in the 90s. And so, yeah, I have seen that one before. It's a very good video.
I said to my wife, I said, I got to tell Fred about this. Yeah. Now I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I have not been there yet. That was well done. I think that was actually produced in conjunction not only with PBS, but also I think the Ohio Historical Society may have had a hand in that when that was done years ago. Yeah,
I'm sure I saw the Ohio Historical Society credit at
part
the
of the
end.
Credits. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I was looking for
Although,
your name on there.
Well,
they didn't have it.
They didn't. No, and actually, I was involved back then in a minor role, but. The Ohio Historical Society does not have any direct connection with Malabar. They don't own a portion of it or anything like that. I think at that time they were just asked for some film advice as far as putting together a documentary type thing on it. But it's actually, the farm, of course, is actually owned by the state of Ohio and the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Division of parks.
Since there might be people that are just tuning in that have never heard you and I talk about Malabar Farm, why don't you give them a little thumbnail Malabar Farm is all about?
Malabar Farm was started actually back in the late 30s, early 40s by Louis Broomfield, who was at the time a world famous author. In fact, he was the highest.
They said he was as famous as guy from Georgia. He was one of the most famous.
Well, he actually, he was in the category of F. Scott Fitzgerald and people like that.
Yeah.
In fact, for several years, he was the highest paid author in the world.
Hemingway is the guy.
Yes. He was friends with Hemingway. However, he and Hemingway did not get along very well.
Well,
I don't think Hemingway got along with anybody.
Friends.
But beyond that. But anyway, to make a long story short, he was actually from Mansfield. He was born and raised in Mansfield, grew up in a house on 3rd Avenue, about two blocks from downtown Mansfield. Mansfield. Everybody knows where the carousel is, downtown Mansfield on the Main Street. He was grew up in that general area, but went away to war, to World War One. Drove for the American Ambulance Service in France during World War One. Eventually became part of the U.S. Army in World War One. Lived in France for a number of years. After that, eventually came back to his home county of Richland County, bought three farms, put the three farms together, called it Malabar, named for the coast of India, where he spent some time hunting, and started practicing conservation and that types of thing.
They really talked about in the show, conservation big efforts, conservation.
Yeah. Well, a lot of his ideas were not actually new ideas. They weren't his ideas, but his farm manager at the time copied a lot of the ideas that the Amish were doing and had done for quite a while.
Not too far from the Amish.
Absolutely. You know, such thing as conserving the land, rotating crops, creating waterways for the water to run away so that they didn't get take the soil with it, and crop rotation, things like that.
Yeah.
So, but he also was an author, as I said, and he wrote 31 books in 30 years. One of them won the Pulitzer Prize, and 12 of them were actually made into movies. So he is very famous, built this 32-room mansion from 1939 to 1940, took 2 years, well, a year and a half to build, and raised his family there, and then he died fairly young. He was only 59 when he died in 1956. So,
are you? Do you have a direct connection with Malabar, or you just love Malabar?
Well, I do have a direct connection with Malabar. He had a dairy there in the early years of the farm. He raised dairy cattle. And I grew up on a dairy farm in southern Ohio, in Scioto County. I think I've mentioned that before.
Sure.
And so in 1954, my father, my grandfather, my brother, and I went up to Malabar to listen to Louis give one of his talks. Every Sunday he gave a talk in front of his house. They used to call him the Sermon on the Mount. And he usually had ideas about land conservation, farming practices, new type of practices, that type of thing, dairy operations and so forth. And since we were in the dairy, my grandfather knew him and wanted to go up and listen to him. So that's my very first connection with Malabar Farm.
Cool.
I don't remember a whole lot about it other than playing with the dogs. That's about all I remember about it. But that was something he was famous for. And it was nothing unusual for 100 people to show up on a Sunday to listen to him talk. And he fed them all.
It sounded like he almost passed away penniless. Didn't have a lot of money left.
Pretty much so. He was cash poor.
Yeah.
He had a lot of assets,
property,
of course.
Yeah.
The farm at that time was around 700 acres and with a 32-room mansion and several barns and so forth. So he had assets, but he didn't have much cash.
Yeah.
He made big money. Back when he was really prolific in his writing in the 40s, late 30s and early 40s, mid-40s, he was making $1 million a year, which if you equate that to today's money, you know, that was several million dollars, $10 million. So he was making a lot of money, but he spent it as fast as he made it. Obviously,
he gave it away.
Well,
he didn't give it away, but he kind of did things for other people.
He was very philanthropic, right? But he was also one that liked to throw a lot of parties. so there was all his activity going on at the big house. A lot of Hollywood people spent time there, came there to relax.
Well, a couple of them got married.
They did, especially because of his connection with some of his books being turned into movies. He spent time in Hollywood doing screenwriting for some of those books. So a lot of his Hollywood people came there and stayed for days. Mm-hmm. The farm obviously took a lot of money, too. I mean, you're talking a farm that at that time was probably 350 acres of ground in production, the rest of it in woods. But with all the new things that he was trying all the time, it cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he employed a lot of people. There were several people that worked in the house. He had a big crew that worked on the farm. He was gone a lot of time, giving speeches throughout the country, doing programs on radios and talking about land conservation and crop rotation and things that he was doing at Malabar. He was actually America's Farm. It was actually called America's Farm in the day.
What was the most famous movie that he, or a book that he wrote?
Well, The Rains Came was probably one of the most famous movies of all, because that was turned into a major motion picture that won an Academy Award in 1939, up against the likes of The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine the competition, you know, The Wizard of Oz with flying monkeys and all that stuff, and The Burning of Atlanta and Gone with the Wind, for The Rains Came to take home the Oscar for special effects, which was quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
That was probably the most famous one because of the fact that it was connected to movies. Yeah. He had a lot of movie friends. As you mentioned earlier, Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall were married there at the Big House in 1946, I believe. And, of course, they stayed together until Bogey's death in 57, died a year after Louis did. They were best friends. They were best friends. They talked on the phone at least once a week, and Bogart visited the farm on more than one occasion, of course, the primary one being when he got married.
Yeah,
to the 18-year-old Lauren Bacall.
Was she 18?
She was 18 at the time.
Yeah, yeah, and he was considerably older than
yes, a lot older, yes.
In his late 30s, maybe.
He was actually in his 40s.
Was he into his 40s?
Yeah, so there was a lot of age difference there.
Yeah.
They went on to have two kids. And both of the children are still alive, Stephen Bogart and his sister, I think his sister's name was Lauren or Lauren, something like that.
Hmm.
And they're both still alive. In fact, Stephen Bogart is my age.
Ah, so. Okay. Well, today we're going to bring back memories of movies.
We're going to talk about...
And, this is a continuation of the last
month.
It is.
It is. Actually, I thought today we'd concentrate mostly on musicals. I think we covered most of
musicals.
Our favorite other musicals.
Yeah.
And I have a list that I put together, and then I also have a list of 50 little or known musicals, which I confess I haven't seen all of, but I thought we'd talk about that as well.
Okay.
But before we do...
Yeah.
And again, we don't have a break at
10:30,
right?
No,
so
you
we
can
go
roll
straight
right
till
on.
11.
Yeah.
Okay. I did have a few announcements for the Marion County Historical Society. First, I want to talk about the gun raffle that we have done now. I think this is our fifth year for doing the gun raffle. Can anyone use an extra $500? I like to start off with saying that. And the reason I say that is because in the raffle, we either give you an opportunity to take the raffle prize or you can take a cash option of $500.
That would pay my deductible
for
my accident.
Your accident that just happened, and the raffle prize is actually a Henry 357 Magnum rifle that features the engraving of the Marion Steam Shovel. So there are obviously a lot of people that would like to have that one-of-a-kind rifle in their collection. And you don't necessarily have to be a gun aficionado to want that type of a weapon, because it is a one-of-a-kind. It's a commemorative. Of course, Henry's either made in the USA or not made at all. That's their slogan. And we've given away Henry's for the last, I think, like I said, I think this is our fifth year of doing it. So if you're interested in that, tickets are $10 a piece. They're limited to 400. And they're going fast, I understand. I talked to Randy Wendland just last week, who's chairman of this particular project, and he said they have sold, I think, over 100 tickets already out of the 400.
And we got a ways to go.
And the drawing is in November, so they're going pretty quick. They are available for purchase at the Marion County Historical Society's Museum Heritage Hall, and you can get those by either stopping at the museum Monday through Friday, from 9 to 4, you can go up at the State Street door, ring the doorbell, and the girls will come and let you in and sell you a ticket. Or you can get them by stopping in the museum when we're open for tour hours from 1 to 4, Wednesday through Sunday, and they have tickets available there that you can get them. So virtually, you can buy a ticket 7 days a week there.
And people that don't know where the museum is, it's right there at the corner of State Street and Center, or Church.
Church Street, right. The old post office building. Yep. That's the easiest way to tell people. It's the old post office building.
Not if you didn't grow up here.
Downtown Marion. If you didn't grow up here, you wouldn't know that. But it's that big granite building on the corner, like you said, of State and Church. When you come, you can park in our parking lot at the rear of the building. And as I said, the State Street side door, just go up the steps and ring the bell, and the girls will be happy to sell you a ticket. Like I said, $10 or 2 for $20 or however many you want, $10 shakes it out. But when they're gone, they're gone, and that drawing will be held on November the 9th. So, and I'll be able to mention that announcement again because I'll be back a couple of times, I think. Well, at least one more time.
One more time, yeah.
Before that. And I may even call in.
Okay, we'll allow that. We'll allow that. Yeah, and yeah. You send us a note of Swap Shop and we can mention it.
Yeah, and I appreciate it, by the way, mentioning on Shop Swap.
Swap Shop.
Yeah. The Dinner with the Presidents.
Yeah.
I heard that.
I've got it. Right here to do it today.
I've heard that a couple of times on there, and I do appreciate that. We need all the free advertisement we can get. Obviously, we operate on a pretty small budget, and we don't get any help from anybody. We used to get some help from the county commissioners, but because of their tight budget anymore, they're not able to help us anymore. So basically, our income is derived from a few small grants that we get from ticket sales, visitors to the museum, for our membership. We thank goodness for our membership, and also for events like the Dinner with the Presidents that is coming up on November the 6th. This year's dinner will be held at Dayspring Wesleyan Church, which is located across the road from Menards on Marion Mount Gilead Road. Or
I noticed you're out of your regular event.
We are. The VIP seating is totally gone, and that's seating with the president, where you get to have an opportunity to have some dinner conversation with the president of your choice. However, general seating is still available. General seating ticket pricing is $32 for adults. $20 for children age 5 to 12, and we don't recommend it for anybody under the age of 5 because they won't understand what's going on and won't appreciate it. I will mention the VIP presidents this year. VIP presidents, of course, they are divided into two categories, speaking and non-speaking. And when I say speaking, that's speaking to the general audience at the end of the dinner.
They all sit around at the tables, right?
Yes, there are non-speaking
and
presidents.
And I just counted it up there, 13 of them.
Yes, absolutely, plus a couple of special guests. Mm-hmm. So speaking this year, opening up the speaking is, of course, the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, and she will speak first. And then we will have George Washington, Martin Van Buren, Warren Harding, and John Kennedy as our featured speakers. And they will talk for 5 to 10 minutes. And I tell them they can talk about anything they want. If they want to talk about their life before the presidency, during the presidency, or post-presidency, whatever the case might be, I leave it up to them. And so they kind of maybe sometimes will give you a little taste of both. I kind of like it when they talk about things that are little known about their presidency. That's always interesting. And when they talk about their families, I think that's very interesting too. Because a lot of people, when you're studying history, which by the way, they don't do much anymore in
the
school system.
Of course they do not, yeah.
But when we were kids,
is history, right?
We learned a lot about the presidents, but we didn't learn some of the littler known facts
about
their families
and
pets and things like that.
Maybe you got the first lady's name, and
absolutely,
that's about it.
And that was about it, yeah. So non-speaking presidents this year, James Madison, Ulysses Grant, always a favorite. Chester Arthur, one of our little or known presidents, because he actually never ran for president. He succeeded from an assassination. Benjamin Harrison. Teddy Roosevelt, always a real fan favorite. People love Teddy Roosevelt. Woodrow Wilson, Harry Truman, another big fan favorite. Dwight Eisenhower. And this year, for the first time ever, we have a table dedicated strictly to a first lady, and that's Barbara Pierce Bush, who was the first lady of George H.W. Bush, the 41st president. Older Bush, the older Bush.
Yeah.
So if this goes over well, and by the way, her table sold out.
Oh, good.
If this goes over well, we may do this in the future, featuring one or maybe two of our tables with a first lady.
I would love to be there when...
Minus their husband.
Yeah. I'd love to be there when First Lady Kennedy is there.
Well, and she will be there, of course, this year with her husband, John Fitzgerald, at a table, but she won't be speaking this year. We did have her at our First Lady's Luncheon this year, and I must say she did an excellent job. She basically talked about her life after the presidency, of course, with him being assassinated in 63. She lived a pretty long life after that, and so she talked about her
Did she ever marry an Onassis, or were they just
Yeah, I think she did. Yeah, I think they did actually marry. She did not talk about her marriage to Onassis. She talked about her wedding preparations with John and how much her father-in-law kind of dictated what went on in that wedding. And, of course, we all know Joe Kennedy was a very strong-willed individual.
Oh, he was indeed.
And, he kind of ruled the roost. Although I think the woman behind the man, Rose, spoke a lot of what he spoke. So even though he may have been calling shots in the public, I think Rose had a lot to do with it in the background. So, and our master of ceremonies this year will be James M. Cox, who was the 46th and 48th governor of Ohio, and who was also a candidate for president running against Warren Harding in 1920. Of course, he lost. So, since we've got Warren Harding there this year, there may be some sparks flying.
I was going to say, is there going to be a fight?
It could be. Could be. There may be some sparks flying between Cox and Harding. Remains to be seen.
Were they unfriendly?
No, not necessarily. They both knew each other. Because they had also run for governor, opposing each other. Of course, Cox got beat out Harding for the governorship of Ohio. So he did win one election against
Harding.
He got the consolation prize of being governor of Ohio. And, of course, they both had history in the newspaper business because Cox was the owner and editor of the Dayton Daily News.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and, of course, Harding was the owner and operator or the editor of the Marion Star. Yeah. So they had a connection there. And so I always like to tell people when they go through the museum and get to the Harding Rooms and we talk about the 1920 election, in 1920 it didn't matter who you voted for. You were going to get a guy from Ohio who was also a newspaper man.
Well, there have been an awful lot of Ohio presidents.
Eight in total.
And I think that's tied for the most, isn't
it? It is actually the most. Virginia had seven. They like to also claim William Henry Harrison, but he was actually born in Ohio. So And, of course, Indiana likes to claim Benjamin Harrison because he moved to North Bend, Indiana, after spending his formative years in Ohio. So we get pulled both ways with the Harrisons, but they were both born in Ohio.
Well, if you're born here, then you're, an Ohio person.
We actually call Ohio the birthplace of presidents because we had eight born here.
So that means I have to consider myself a Hoosier.
True. If you were born in Indiana.
I was. Indianapolis,
And there's nothing wrong with that. One of my favorite movies is The Hoosiers.
Oh, I love it, yeah.
A great movie.
And my sister actually was at those basketball games.
Oh, really? The recreation games?
All three of us, my brother, sister, and myself, we all went to South Bend Central.
Oh, okay. And, is that where they were held?
Well, supposedly that was the final game.
Oh, okay.
In the movie, that was the final game.
Uh-huh.
It really wasn't. But South Bend Central, when all three of us went to South Bend Central, was about 35% African American.
When you say last game, you mean the championship game? Okay,
game.
Because they in the movie they say that's in Indianapolis and it's supposed to be the field house.
And I played for Butler, so I've been in Hinkle Fieldhouse many times. Matter of fact, Coach Hinkle was my coach.
So that was actually the field house
played
in.
And
it's huge.
Yeah, when you see it on TV, that is the Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
anyway, that I got a lot of tales about that.
I'll bet. That was a great. And we're digressing here a little bit, but that was a great movie and one of my favorite all time movies. One of my favorite all time sports movies. My other one, of course, is We Are Marshall.
I have not seen that.
Oh, Glenn, you have to watch that movie.
Okay.
Let me finish this. Let's talk a little bit about that movie.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'd like.
Dinner with the Presidents again. Saturday, November the 6th, tickets are on sale now. You can get those tickets just like you could get them for the gun raffle. You can go to the museum and pick them up. You can go online at MarionHistory.com, buy them with PayPal, or stop at the museum and get them. Or you can call, and they can take your information over the phone, hold them for you. You can pick them up the night of the event. The event is from 5:30 to 8:30. We try to finish at 8:30. Sometimes it runs over if the presidents get a little windy. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
The dinner buffet. Glenn, you got to come. Maybe I'll get you a couple of complimentary tickets.
Well, I would take a couple of complimentary tickets.
You would really enjoy it.
I don't have any clothes anymore to go to a fancy
ball.
Well,
I people worry about that, and I tell them, you know, you can come in period costume. You can come in a suit and tie. You can come in ordinary street clothes. It doesn't matter. It's not a formal thing for you. We do dress up. Of course, the presidents and the characters are all dressed up. But it's not formal, so you don't have to worry about that.
I could call my eldest son, who is a reenactor. He has both Southern and Northern uniforms.
Well, there you go. You could come as a...
He's about... 80 pounds lighter than
I do know a good seamstress. She could take a tuck here and there. But no, you don't have to worry about dress. I tell people they can come casual. That's no problem. We've had people there in shorts before. So.
Really?
Although it's November, you know.
It'd
I don't know.
Chilly,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, there are some macho guys around
I
who
have
wear shorts
seen them,
in November.
Yes.
But dress is casual, obviously. But it's going to be at Day Spring Wesleyan Church, and we've been there. Except for last year with COVID. I think this is our third year at Day Spring Wesleyan. They have a real nice facility there.
Yeah,
they built a big gymnasium behind their school or behind their church, and it's perfect for
I've held events there, and they were always fine. Yeah.
But tickets are available now. We do ask that you make reservations before Thursday, October the 21st. So you're down to a little over, 5 weeks before ticket
like
sales
that,
will be cut off. And we have to cut ticket sales off because – the dinner buffet, which is really the dinner buffet, not to say that the president speaking isn't a highlight, but the dinner buffet is really a highlight to a lot of people because the dinner buffet is all based on the recipes of foods that the speaking presidents ate while they were in the White House.
Which could be very bad.
Well, some of them are extremely unusual. Well,
yeah,
when you take,
unusual.
For instance, you got a George Washington and a Martin Van Buren, who was the first and the eighth president. Sometimes you get some strange dishes
you
that those people ate back in those days.
Really weird stuff from
you
Washington's
can.
Era, yeah.
And the caterer that we use, the folks out of Upper Sandusky.
She's great, yeah.
She's absolutely fantastic. She's been our caterer since the beginning. And she does a wonderful job in matching some of these recipes that calls for some things that I've never heard of before.
Yeah.
And I wish I could think of some of the names of some of the stuff. Well, Hopping John is one, the name of the thing. We've had a cucumber salad, which I guess isn't something that people don't know of, but people don't eat cucumber salad
very often.
Yeah.
But I do.
Some of the desserts, some of the main dishes, Delmonico potatoes, things like that. So we try to stay as near as we can to those recipes. And the girls at the museum that set this all up, that do all the recipes, pick what we're going to do. They do a wonderful job in trying to get things that we haven't had before.
Cool.
So that's what really, in a lot of people's minds, stands out for our dinner are the recipes. And again, the speaking presidents with the information you get.
Yeah.
And if you're fortunate enough to sit at one of the tables with a president, you get that dinner conversation. And I will say our reenactors do a wonderful job in studying their characters, both the presidents and the first ladies.
Mm-hmm.
They try to be as informed as they can about their characters. Now, that's not saying that they can't be stumped, because
they really weren't there.
Well, they really weren't there, right. But we have had some people, some guests, who, if they know far enough in advance that they've got a seat with a certain president, they're going to do some digging. And they're going to ask some strange off-the-wall question that they found in some history book buried away about this particular president and see if they can catch you.
Did you really like Mary Ellen's story when you were in sixth grade?
Well, and I try to tell my characters, my reenactors, I said, you know, look, do the best you can. If you don't know the answer to something, don't lie. Don't make something up. Just try to pass over it some way, you know, change the subject, move on, say, well, I don't particularly want to talk about that, or whatever the case might be.
Sounds very political.
Yeah, make some excuse for yourself. Don't lie to them. Make something up, because if they have done their homework, they know the answer. You know?
Yeah, they
would. Or they wouldn't be asking you that question. So.
That's right.
But this is a good example. I had one time I was doing President McKinley, and I thought I knew everything about the president because I am related to the president.
Ah, okay.
And I've been a student of President McKinley for years, but one of our volunteers at the museum was in wait for me, lying for me, or laying for me, however you want to say it. And she, during the dinner conversation, she wanted to know about my pet parrot. Well, for the life of me, I had no idea what she was talking about. I had no idea what she was talking about. And the only thing I could think of was, I don't like that bird, never did, I don't want to talk about it. And we went on with something else. After the dinner, I went home. Caught her. And I went through every book I could find in my library on McKinley, and I finally found one reference to that. He did have a bird. He did have a parakeet, a parrot, and it was called the Washington Post March. That was the name of the parrot.
I don't like that march.
The Washington Post March was McKinley's favorite march.
Huh.
And he called this parrot the Washington Post March. Yeah. Uh-huh. So she did know. She did her homework. She knew there was
she
a.
Did.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I always tell the folks that are being presidents or first ladies or whatever their character might be, do the best you can. Learn as much as you can about it. But, hey, after all, we're not professionals.
Yeah, and they don't think you're really that person.
No. Well, sometimes the kids do.
Yeah.
Become the younger kids. I've had 7, 8, 9-year-old kids come up to me afterwards and want my autograph. You know,
well.
And I have to sign it, you know, William McKinley or whoever I'm doing because they think that's who I am.
Yeah.
Really. Cool. So, anyway, again, November the 6th. It's on a Saturday, 5:30 to 8:39. Dayspring Wesleyan Church, tickets are available now. You got to get them before October the 21st. Price for general seating is $32, $20, I'm sorry, yeah, $32, $20 for general seating for kids 5 to 12. Children under 5 should be left at home with a babysitter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, it says here on your notification that I've been reading from that general seating is $35. Should I change that to $32?
Well, the recent thing that they gave me is 32. So
okay, I'm going to change it on our note here.
Yeah, 32.
All right. Good. All right.
All right, I got one more event to talk about.
All right.
And I have a prepared script that I'm going to read. Randy Winland, I think, put this together. And this is Randy has been in charge of the I'm not sure if he's the totally guy in charge of this event, but he's worked really hard behind the scenes putting this all together. And I should say that this event will kick off our capital campaign. We're trying to raise $1 million to do improvements on Heritage Hall. The roof on Heritage Hall is the original roof put on in 1910 when the building was built.
It is a ceramic tile roof.
And again, over the year, we don't want to change the roof. We want to maintain the same roof, but it does need some repair.
Yeah,
we are
fortunate
that we do have several tiles in our third floor attic of the building. So we do have some tiles that can be used to repair those that are broken or in some way not working properly. There are companies out there now that replicate these tiles, and so we will be able to keep the same look of the building. So it's not going to be torn off and shingles put on or something like that.
That's good.
But it's a very expensive proposition. I know when we replaced the tile roof on my church in Cary, the Our Lady of Consolation Catholic Church in Cary, that was a $2 million project.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, very, very expensive.
Yikes.
Very expensive. So anyway, this will kick off the capital campaign. I'm going to take a real quick sip.
Yeah, that's all right. Now, and then once you get through this business, we'll go back and talk about the Marshall movie.
Absolutely.
And then we're going to be at break pretty soon then.
Figured that good, didn't we?
Yeah.
So listen up, all you sheiks and shebas. Dig out your knee dusters and spiffy Gatsby gear for a swell evening on October the 16th when history comes alive. The Roaring Twenties at Heritage Hall and the Wind-Up Popcorn Museum. It will be the real deal, featuring a jiving juice joint with 1920s-style libations, hors d'oeuvres, and fabulous frivolity, all the while chatting with the likes of Warren G. and Florence Harding, Cole Porter, Edward Huber, Groucho Marx, and many, many more local and national celebrities. It'll be the cat's pajamas when you browse through the ever-evolving exhibits at the Marion County Historical Society and the Wyandotte Popcorn Museum while sipping vintage cocktails like Bee's Knees, French 75s, or the ever-popular New York Sours.
Ooh.
A variety of craft beers evoking 1920s brewing styles will also be available. All the hooch and giggle water will be provided by the Real McCoy of Marion Speakeasies, the Shovel City Drinkery on North Main Street.
All right.
Classic soda pops, including Shirley Temple's, Sarsaparilla, and the all-ever Birch Beer, will be iced down and ready to enjoy. Finger foods popular in the Roaring Twenties and all the fresh hot popcorn you care to eat also are included in the cost of admission. Now, don't be a sap. Get a wiggle on and mark your calendar for a swell evening on October the 16th. Tickets, which are limited in number and available only to those 21 years of age and older, are available for purchase beginning now at Heritage Hall or online at www.marionhistory.com. Hey, it's going to be a real humdinger of an evening.
That's 1 month from now, and it's on a Saturday. Now. Yeah, yeah. Pretty cool. And I love the writing of that ad.
Oh, I thought they did a wonderful job with it.
Yep, yeah, they did.
They did a wonderful job with it. So, We Are Marshall.
Yeah, tell me
We
about
Are Marshall.
That. I happen to have a relationship with the things that went on because when I was at OU, we played Marshall in football several times and basketball every year. So, I have friends that told me lots of stories.
Well, do you remember the plane crash?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what really is behind the movie, We Are Marshall. I graduated from Logan High School in 1968, went on to Ohio University in Athens, and one of my friends who
we
played...
love Bobcats.
Go, Bob. Go, Bob. Did you say boo or go?
No, I said I love Bobcats.
One of my friends who played football at the time, Jeff Angle, went to Marshall on a football scholarship. I never can remember whether it was 69 or 70 when the crash occurred.
I don't remember that either.
Maybe you can Google it for
me
real quick.
I'll look it up for you.
But anyway, the Marshall football team was scheduled to play, and I don't even remember who the opponent was for this particular game. But they were scheduled to play a football game, not at Marshall, but away. And on their way home from the football game, the plane ran into a storm and crashed, killing the entire football team on board and several parents and staff involved. There were four students who did not get on the plane. One of the students was my friend Jeff Angle, and he had tested positive for mononucleosis and wasn't able to travel with the team, or he would have died in a plane crash.
It was November 14th, 1970. 75 people were killed.
Yeah, 1970.
Yikes.
So I got chills thinking about it.
I met
Jeff could have been killed on that plane.
I met somebody. When I was in Marshall, that was scheduled to be on that flight as well and didn't go, and I can't remember.
Was it one of the coaching staff or one of the players?
It was one of the administrators that I met, and I think probably the earliest that I ever met with people from Marshall was I came to Ohio in '83, so that was about as early. But that was only 13 years after the fact.
Well, and of course the movie opens up with the crash, and then basically the movie is they recruited, obviously had to recruit a new coach, is by the way played by Matthew McConaughey, who did an absolutely wonderful job in the movie. But it took a number of years for Marshall to rebuild.
Yes.
They basically started with four, and one of the guys didn't play. He just couldn't. Jeff left. Jeff came back and ended up at Ohio University. He couldn't stand it. He just mentally it was just wrecked him.
But
they basically had to rebuild the football team with three carryovers and freshmen.
Yeah, yeah,
all freshmen. And of course, the first couple of seasons there were no wins. They might have had one, I think. I can't remember. But the movie is. It's a tearjerker. Even if you're not familiar with what happened, just watching the movie, you're going to get wrapped up in it. But they finished the movie with meeting at the memorial. Have you ever been to the memorial?
No, I have not.
They finished the movie. They're playing a game, and the team all meets at the coach takes them all to the memorial in the morning. Now, all freshman players, with the exception of these three that had been on the previous team. And that's where the movie actually starts out, and then they go play this game because these kids are scared to death.
Yeah.
I mean, they're absolutely scared to death.
So, yeah, I can understand.
But it's a great movie. One of the coaches that was an assistant coach, he didn't want anything to do with the team, But the coach that was hired, who was, I think, actually coaching somewhere in Ohio at the time, maybe at Worcester College, mm-hmm. Who came down to coach the team, he did manage to talk this guy into coming back and helping him that first year, and then he left after that, couldn't do it anymore. But it's an absolutely amazing movie. It's been out for several years now, but I have a copy of it. Occasionally you can pick it up on TV, but I'm sure you can find it on Netflix or one of those places.
Yeah, I saw it but maybe 2 or 3 months ago
on TV.
But
being an athletic director and your association with the MAC, you would love the movie.
I'm sure I would.
And get a box of Kleenex when you sit down and watch it, because I guarantee you, it's going to bring some tears to your eyes.
Well, I'm an easy cry. So.
Me too. The older I get, the more I can turn on like a faucet. Yeah. It just comes.
I have an interesting relationship with that. I wasn't on a plane, but when I was at DePaul University in Chicago, we played Evansville in their last game before they had a crash. And then we also played them in their first game after the crash. And it was covered by a famous sports guy. You'd know him if I could remember his name. I can't remember his name. I can see him in my mind, but I can't remember his name. But anyway, it was covered by – well, this guy wrote for Sports Illustrated because it was such a big thing.
I remember when that happened. Right, I remember when that happened.
I was not with the team that before the crash, but I was with the team when we played them after the
crash.
How
many casualties do you recall?
I don't recall, but it was the sports information director down there was one of the people that did not go. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was sick. I just think he wasn't invited. Mm-hmm. But he had gone on several of the trips, but he didn't go on that, and we talked a long time about it. And, you know, brought him to tears because of.
Well, when people think about 75 casualties, they don't think that sounds like a very lot because, of course, football teams today are much larger than what they were back then.
Yeah,
and there were some parents on board as well coaching staff. So I don't know what the team roster held in those days, and I don't know how many. I don't know what the breakdown was between parents and coaching staff, but. I know it doesn't sound like a lot of people, but that was a tremendous impact. Well, it killed all but 4 members of the football team. So
they were on a DC-9, which was a pretty old airplane.
That's an old airplane. Well, that would have been a prop
back
plane.
Back then, yeah.
Yeah, yes, that would still have been a prop plane, right. But in 1970, and I remember flying, I can't remember, it must have been about 71 or 72. I remember flying, I think, to Florida on a DC-9.
Yeah.
So I've been on a DC-9
I've
before.
Been on one, but it was a flight around an airport so that I could fly on one.
Just to say you've been on one.
Oh, me.
So that was the early days. Well, you might say the early days of flying because, really, people weren't flying much prior to that, really. Some in the 30s and 40s, but... that was still pretty early in commercial flights.
The ones in 30s or 40s were going to war.
Absolutely, right. Well,
or coming back from war.
And the other day, I just finished reading a book about a girl had written about growing up on Put-in Bay Island. We were up there in June or May, and she was talking about the Tin Goose. And I'd flown on the Tin Goose many times, going from the mainland over to Put-in Bay.
Huh.
So when you think about prop planes, not that many people, of course, anybody under the age of 40s probably never flew on a prop plane, period.
Unless they got in one of those connector flights in between, you know, Chicago
or a
Milwaukee.
Or a private plane that only seats two or three people, But to be on a something like the DC-9, which probably only held 75 or 80 people.
Yeah, probably did.
That was probably full capacity. It's a total different experience.
Yeah, back then, I think probably 75 was the maximum number
most,
of players
most
that
likely.
They had.
Yeah, most likely.
Now, there was a period where they allowed football teams to get as high as they wanted to, and there were a few like University of Alabama
or some of the bigger schools, Texas, that got
up to 140, 150. But then they cut it back. I think the maximum you can have now is 109, or maybe it's even down to 89. Is that less now. But
well, just remembering the Tin Goose, the original Tin Goose, which, by the way, we have one completed and one's being rebuilt up at the Liberty Air Museum in Port Clinton.
Is that right?
Great place to visit. Nobody's ever been up there. But the Tin Goose, the original Tin Goose, had metal seats in it.
Oh.
And when I did the island hop flight. The first time I did an island hop flight over to Put-in Bay, they still had the metal seats in them.
Did they give you peanuts?
No, they didn't.
No peanuts.
No, but the original Tin Goose had wicker seats in it.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Oh, my.
The original Tin Goose, the Ford Tri-Motor, had wicker seats in it. And if you go to the museum in Put-in Bay, which I did when I was up there this past June, they have one of the original wicker seats in there. Then they have one of the metal seats in there as well,
well, that's
to show you what
fun,
it was
yeah.
like to fly in it. Yeah.
Well, we're down to our last minute before the break.
Okay.
What should we tell our listeners to get prepared for?
Well, we're going to be talking about musicals. Musical movies. One of my favorites, The King and I.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, we'll be talking about all kinds of musicals, and we want you to call in with your favorite
Absolutely.
Musical and talk to us about the ones that we talk about and talk about ones we're not talking about.
740-383-9944. So we would love to have you call us up and tell us what your favorite musical was at 740-383-9944. Now, I doubt that you know this, but I have performed in West Side Story as Bernard and then a time as Riff.
So,
once in high school and once in college.
I'm in the company of a professional.
Boy, if you'd watched me dance, you wouldn't believe that. All right, we're going to break away, and we've got Fred Malone here, and we'll be back in about 15 minutes. Have a good day.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary owner of the Marion grocery store, Smith Cardinal, Bob Smith.
Well, at the height of, you know, sealing things and everything, the height of one time, well, two times is a big story. This, we had been into teaching us how to know how to recognize somebody stealing. So this woman came up, and she was walking funny like this. And so I thought, well, something's wrong here. I think she's got something between her legs, because we had seen that before, you know, in teaching. And so I went up and bumped her, and sure enough, a turkey fell out.
You know, is there any particular reason, I'm glad it does, but that the sign still stands over there?
Oh, yeah. Well, some truck hit it the other day. And,
oh, gosh.
And it shook it up. It didn't come down, but I thought about taking a shotgun in there and blow it up.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Like us on Facebook by searching WWGH, Marion, Ohio, 107.1.